Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Kel Fritzy. She's the infidel your imam warned you about, and there's no holding her back as she shares her opinions, insights, information, and outrage discussing the political entity known as Islam. We are at a critical juncture in our history, and if the threat of Islam is not faced up front, right now, then we will lose the freedoms of individuality, civic justice, and autonomy of thought we rightly enjoy, and instead see our values replaced with kinetic and civilizational jihad, Sharia law, and oppression permanently. Don't let the memory of our soldiers, past and present, go in vain. It is up to us to protect the legacy for which they fought so hard. We have an obligation to honor their memory today and for future generations. Join Kel Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern and Fridays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Blog Talk Radio. But leave your political correctness well away from her phone lines and chat room. And be warned, Kel takes no prisoners.
GoDamnMedia.com.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger, and I'm your humble host, Kel Fritzy. I'm glad you could join me tonight. We have quite a few topics that we have to discuss. But first, I want to share a little story with you, and this involves Halloween. I'm sorry, I have to share this, and I think Mr. Kel is going to kill me. But last night I was on producing duties for another program, and that was out of the UK. And, of course, that is the East Anglian EDL radio show. So their clocks went ahead an hour before ours due tomorrow or Sunday morning at 2 a.m. So North America, don't forget to turn your clocks back there on Sunday morning at 2 a.m. But anyway, so needless to say, we're an hour behind the UK in that sense. So I had to do some work there. The show ran later than it normally would. It ran to 6:30 as opposed to 5:30. That's what I mean by an hour later for me. So my husband had to dole out the Halloween candy to the kids. I finished the Jeff's show, and I came upstairs, and there he is. There's kids at the door, and he's handing out this candy. He's going, "Okay, did you get yours? You got yours? Okay, you got yours?" Now, if you know Mr. Kel, he's, well, a grown man doling out Halloween candy to little kids. That's Mr. Kell, and that's his awkward moment. So I'm at the top of the stairs, and I'm listening to him, and I'm just bursting out laughing. I'm sure that when I turn my back to go into the kitchen, I'm sure I could feel the burning in the back of my head with his eyes glaring at me. Why are you making me do this? This is your job. However, it was a very nice Halloween. The kids had a lot of fun. We had more kids than usual this year. That was very nice to see, despite the fact that Halloween is being taken away from us, and it has been turned into Black and Orange Day at the schools, and some schools have banned Halloween altogether due to cultural sensitivities and because some kids, well, they can't afford costumes to wear to school. I was listening to a radio program. I was just shaking my head. Yeah, schools are canceling Halloween. Yep. One in particular that I just aforementioned, because kids cannot afford to buy the costumes. What happened to making your own damn costumes? For goodness sake. When I was a kid and Halloween came about, we made our own costumes. See, back then we had creativity. Back then we had a vested interest in ensuring that we were the best on the street. We would outdo each other in our creativity. That's not happening anymore. Schools canceling Halloween because the kids can't afford costumes, some certain demographics or whatever. What really bothers me, though, is that because of cultural sensitivities, Halloween has been banned altogether in some jurisdictions. I find that rather disconcerting. I'm going to discuss that a little further down the road. I hope you enjoyed my funny Halloween story, and I'm sorry I put a damper on what's going on here in North America, anyway, about Halloween. It just drives me crazy. I want to talk to you about bus ads a little later on and what's happening in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. I'm going to bring that one up a little later as well. I've got a few things on the burner here. But one thing I do want to showcase is this letter I came across. And this is courtesy of Rockstar. She is the founder of Unforgotten Heroes. And she sent this to me. This is a letter by Jeremy Conway. I think it's probably one of the most powerful letters I have read in a long time, so I'm going to read it to you verbatim. Our most valuable resources, veterans. When I watch the news media from time to time, I hear them refer to our nation's most valuable natural resources. They refer to oil, coal, and natural gas. Pardon me. When I think of our nation's most valuable natural resources, I automatically think about our brave veterans. Veterans are fast becoming our nation's leaders, both in the public and private sector, from CEOs to senators. Veterans are a very unique segment of the population who have been taught the skills needed to make it in today's competitive world. That makes them ideal leaders for the next generation, as veterans have been for over a century. Veterans have traveled to foreign countries and have seen how lucky we as Americans are and to have the wealth and luxury we sometimes take for granted. There is nothing better to put your life as an American citizen into perspective than to travel to a third world nation and see what the people there live without. Just having fresh tap water, something we never even think about day to day, is something a lot of the world goes without. During and after the invasion of Iraq, I went without showering for 4 months, as most of us did, and we would drive the buzzards away if they came too close. When I was finally able to take something resembling a shower and wash my uniforms, I honestly felt brand new. Showering is something we have the luxury of taking every day, and water that is clean and not filled with deadly flesh-eating bacteria. Veterans all over the world go without modern amenities every day, and when they come home, they are very grateful for all the wonderful things we take for granted. Perhaps the greatest skill veterans bring to the table is leadership. Whether they are 20-year-old career soldiers, whether they are 20-year career soldiers who retire as a colonel or a sergeant major, or a one-term specialist or corporal, soldier, marine, sailor, or airman, they are all taught leadership each and every day. They are given responsibilities of looking after the health, morale, and welfare of other soldiers from a fire team to a division or higher. Many Fortune 500 companies seek out leaders from the military and offer them positions with their company simply because of their leadership skills. These companies know that veterans are used to working hard, long hours, and that they are committed to mission accomplishment. These companies know that most veterans they hire will be successful and make them money. This means better jobs for our veterans and a civilian opportunity for veterans to feel like part of a team again. Another highly valuable commodity veterans bring to the table is discipline. Most of the public knows that it takes discipline to be in the military and to be successful. When veterans run for public office, voters know that they are electing someone with integrity who do the right thing for their constituents and make the hard choices. They also know that most veterans will resist the temptations that come along with public office to make money off their public service. Veterans eschew lobbyists who offer fast, easy cash for a vote their way. Veterans are far more likely than civilians to take the moral high ground and resist these temptations. This makes them the obvious choice for most voters. And that's why there are so many young veterans being elected every election cycle. Trustworthiness is paramount to holding public office. All in all, veterans are a smart pick by employers and voters alike. Their experience, character, leadership abilities, and discipline sets them apart from most civilians. Anyone can have a degree, but not everyone has the common sense to be successful at their jobs. If a veteran has served 4 years or 20, they have skills that most companies are looking for. It is just up to our veterans to prepare a great resume and go after the job he or she wants. Just being a veteran will give them the edge against the competition. So the next time you hear the news media refer to our nation's most valuable natural resources, you think like me. You think veterans. I have the link to that article right in the show highlights, and that is from Jeremy Conway. I read that letter with my jaw dropping. I was taken aback, and I had to sit back, and I had to absorb it, because what Mr. Conway conveyed is true. There are much more resources out there than oil, coal, natural gas. They're called our veterans. Support Unforgotten Heroes. Support the likes of Jeremy Conway. And employers, please, hire a veteran. You will not regret it. I wanted to make that the showcase for my program tonight. I went off the issues of Islam. I wanted to share that with you. It was very important for me to do so. Because, as you know, I am a staunch supporter of the troops. I am here to share with you Islamic issues. I am here to share with you global issues, whatever suits the Red Fox, I'll share with you. And this, it was my greatest pleasure to share with you. Thank you, Jeremy Conway. Thank you, Allison of Unforgotten Heroes, for sending this my way. I very much appreciate that. All right, back to the business at hand. There is something really going on out there. And I don't know how happy about this I am. Well, I know I'm very unhappy, but I don't know how unhappy I should be about it, I should say. As a matter of fact, this kind of makes me want to do outrage. And there goes my truncheon. This really set me off. Really set me off. This in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Edmonton Transit, they remove anti-Muslim bus ads. Yeah, that's right, anti-Muslim bus ads. That's the headline, okay? That's the headline in the Edmonton Journal. Edmonton Transit removes anti-Muslim bus ads. Oh, boy. If you go up above the show notes, you'll notice in the slides I have a picture there of what I refer. There is an ad up there from the Stop the Islamicization of America and the AFDA. They campaigned to have these ads put on the bus, and I will explain to you fully what that is in a minute. But Edmonton, the city, they reexamined the way controversial Edmonton Transit ads are approved after pulling anti-Muslim bus placards offering to help Muslim girls threatened with honor killing. Oh, and you're just going to love this. The minute I found out about these ads, I called over to Charlie Soltz, our general manager at Edmonton Transit Services, and showed my displeasure. And this is from Councillor Amarjeet Sohi. They target one group, and in my mind, they were very discriminatory and racist. And there's no place for that kind of bigotry on city property. The posters on the back of the five buses were taken down on Tuesday, and this is 8 days after they went up. They show a photo of a young woman, and several young women, actually, above the caption, "Muslim girls, honor killed by their families. Is your family threatening you? Is there a fatwa on your head? We can help." If you scroll up, look at the slides, there is the photograph. There are all these young Muslimas that have been slaughtered at the hands of their family via honor killing. If this doesn't make you think, I don't know, but the article goes on. Now, this was sponsored by Stop Islamicization of America. They put up the same material in Tampa, Florida. SIOA, they have also run ads on buses in New York, San Francisco, and Miami, and it's aimed at people facing family threats who wanted to leave Islam and fought plans to build a mosque near New York's destroyed World Trade Center. That's SIOA. In a post on her blog site, Atlas Shrugs, SIOA founder Pamela Geller says Edmonton Transit caved to Muslim supremacist demands, and she is correct in that assertion. The ads were installed in Edmonton because human rights activists that she did not want to name wanted to partner with the organization, she writes. The Muslim community protects the religious honor code while smearing and libeling the truth tellers, coming to the aid of these girls as racist. The ads were allowed by Patterson Outdoor Advertising, which sells and approves ads for ETS, Edmonton Transit Services. Scott Gibb, he's the company's Edmonton sales director, couldn't outline exactly what was done to check the content, but says the firm normally makes sure ads at least name the sponsor and provide contact information, which they did in this case. We can't always account for what's going to offend everyone. We're in the process of reviewing that with the city, Mr. Scott Gibb went on to say. But he did not elaborate on what changes might be made. Now, these placards, they cost a total of $2,500. and they were scheduled to stay up until November 17th. Now, in 2009, ETS, they refused to take ads from an atheist group, saying transit sells products, not personal opinions. And I think you're familiar with them. Those are the infamous transit ads. There is no God, so just relax and enjoy life. Yeah, those ones. Well, city staff confirmed a review of the ad approval process. It will be done. They could not say what alternatives are being considered. Now, Mayor Don Ivinson isn't sure a wholesale change to the process is required, but he's glad the ads are gone now, at least for now. I think this slipped through the cracks. I think we just need to ensure the cracks are sealed. I don't think we need to overhaul the whole system, however. Edmonton Muslim Mohammed Abedin said he and his family were offended by the ads. While all of us agree that domestic violence is a major issue, our problem was it was specifically targeting Muslims. He wrote this in an email. The agenda of the group responsible for the ad is to float under the radar, acting like they care for Muslims and offering support, but subliminally conveying the message that this is the type of people Muslims are. Well, you are! We're crying out loud. What do you think the ads are going up in the first place? So he said he received several complaints about the campaign. Honor killing is a serious problem, but this problem is present in every community, not just the Muslim community, so he said. Oh, please. Honor killing, domestic violence is present. It's a social issue in all communities. Now, he plans to meet with transit officials to discuss ways of ensuring ads like this aren't allowed again. I personally feel embarrassed that this happened on city property. We have to make sure these kind of mistakes don't happen in the future. That's right, because we're in the business of discrimination and racism, not in the business of trying to save the lives of Muslims who are threatened by their fathers and their brothers and their very own mothers because they will not conform to Islam. Give me a break! Oh, while I was researching some of this, let me see, where did that cute little name go here? Mohammed Abdu-Dib. He did an interview on television, okay? And I wish I had screensaved it and put it in the show highlights because you guys would laugh your heads off. He's conducting this interview wearing a T-shirt, and on it, it says, "This is what a feminist looks like." Yeah, I'm not kidding you. You're familiar with those T-shirts, I'm sure. That is, men standing in solidarity with women. This is what a feminist looks like. And, yeah, he's wearing this bloody T-shirt conducting this interview. Oh, God. Please, get out of my country! I have a soundbite here, but I'm going to have to tee it up for a minute, so you'll just have to bear with me for a minute, and let me see if that bad boy is going to load for me. There we go. I want to play for you the bubble-headed beach blondes across the desk had to say about this, and I got myself a pop-up here, as I expected I would. And, hey, do you guys want to buy a Lexus? Ooh, it drives on snow. Ooh, looks spiffy. Comes in black and blue and red. Nice. Don't try this at home. This is a closed course. Always drive safely. All right. No, I'm not. Here we are.
The city is pulling a number of controversial ads from Edmonton buses. As we first told you about yesterday, the signs urge Muslim girls to seek help if they're concerned about family violence and honor killings. Our Laura Tupper joins us now live in studio with the latest on this. Laura.
Marnie, these ads have outraged members of the local Muslim community who complain the signs are racist. They also angered one city councillor who called on the transportation department to get the signs removed. The ads were meant to turn heads, and they have, disturbing messages telling Muslim girls to get help if they feel threatened by their families. But as the theme singled out the Muslim community, the campaign angered local Muslim leaders who considered taking their complaints to the Alberta Hate Crimes Committee. Now, that won't have to happen as the ads have been removed.
There's no room for such kind of bigotry and discrimination in our city, and we should not have allowed these ads to start with. But once we found out, we took immediate action and taken them off.
Now, the group behind the ads, the American Freedom Defense Initiative, says Edmonton is the first Canadian city where the ads appeared. Now, a few moments ago, I reached the president of that organization by phone, who expressed shock. The ads had been removed and complains the very disturbing issues related to honor killings cannot be ignored.
So a lot of people speaking out here. Now, this ad has thrust the city's advertising policy into the spotlight here. So where do officials go from here?
Exactly, Emergy. So he says it's proof the vetting process needs to be reviewed. He wants to sit down with the city's transportation department and the organization contracted out to handle bus ads to determine how to improve the criteria and standards for ads on city property.
All right. Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome.
Well, so there you go. Those ads are banned. But we have to be mindful of the Muslims and the bus ads that are allowed to stay up on various buses in various cities. My jihad includes going to the gym every day. Oh, please. Don't try to pretty up Islam with me, because you're not going to get too damn far. Everybody can see right through this. This is just yet another ploy by the Islamic so-called community to shut us up. It's not going to happen. Edmonton, you may have put up a very, very, very tiny chink in our armor, but we're not giving up, because we know what's going on out there, and we are trying to help these girls. Shame on you, Edmonton. Shame, shame, shame on you for doing this, for caving to Islamic pressure. I have somebody on the in the studio, and he wants to come on the air. I'm going to bring him on in a minute. I also want to play for you a little bit later, though. I have a clip from Wild Bill for America. Now, Wild Bill was my guest there last week. As you know, Wild Bill for America, he puts out very, very wonderful YouTube videos. God bless America. That's Wild Bill. He came out with one the other day, and I'm going to share that with you in a moment. But I have this person who has been sitting here very patiently for nearly 20 minutes, and I do not want to leave him or her waiting. But when we do take a break, I'm going to play this clip for you from Wild Bill for America. It's called the World Wife Beating Club. However, let me bring on my friend here. Hello.
Good evening, Kel. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Is this Mike?
Yes, it is.
Mike, how are you? It's very nice to hear from you. I wasn't sure if it was you or Jeff or somebody else, so I was kind of like skimming around, but I knew it would be one of you fine fellas. Mike, what do you think about what I've been discussing tonight?
Well, once again, the leftist idiots, the liberal left, are so overly concerned, just obsessed about the idea that some Muslim somewhere might be offended, their sensibilities might be insulted, because the truth of their alleged religion is being put forth on the side of a bus. I'm very familiar with this whole campaign. Of course, Pam Geller and Robert Spencer are the people behind it in the United States, where they've had success. They've had to go to court, of course, and have litigation to get their ads put out there. But as in Canada and the United States and all through the Western world, we have these nice, I call them the enablers, the leftist enablers of the Islamist fascists, who just, they're just in a tizzy. They're having little temper tantrums because the truth might get out there.
Well, the thing is that it... The truth is already out there. It's there. I don't understand why Islam is fighting the fact that we have very much a global issue with Islam, and specifically Sharia law. they are trying to impose that Sharia law, and we are fighting back, and they're pushing us back further again. This is just another ploy. They use everything against us that they possibly can. If you do this, if you say that, we're going to fight back. We're going to use your very own laws against you. They are already infiltrating the United Nations. They're already in the OIC, the Organization for Islamic Cooperation. They're working fast and furious to get their 10-point plan tabled, and that is the Cairo Declaration. That is their so-called plan to combat terrorism globally and combat discrimination. But what people don't understand is that's actually written under the jurisprudence of Sharia law, something a lot of people don't understand. If they start messing around with our United Nations and if they start messing around with our Constitution, so Mike, we're going to be in a hell of a lot of trouble.
Yeah, well, this is the global problem, you know, the global jihad, and we always talk about the stealth jihad. And that's a very serious threat. In a way, it's somewhat more threatening than violence. I don't believe any Western nation will be taken down through acts of violence, suicide bombings, you know, mass murdering in shopping malls. These are horrific things, and they're to be issues of great concern. But we both know it's really the stealth jihad that is the real threat. And so when someone wants to put up a bus ad or do something in the public marketplace, you know, to shine a big spotlight on this danger, they're ridiculed, they're labeled an Islamophobe, they're labeled a racist, even though Islam's not a race. I don't know where they came up with that one. Anyway, and that's the problem. I've been following things in Canada, and I know that you Canadians have had plenty of issues with the Muslim fascists in your country.
Yeah.
And it seems wherever they take root and establish their communities, these problems manifest. So it makes it hard to accept the idea that Islam is tolerant or peaceful.
It's not tolerant. It's not peaceful. We have seen this witnessed over and over and over again. And I'm going to be getting to an article in a minute after I play Wild Bill, Mike, and I want you to pay close attention to it, because when I was at East Anglians today with Jeff and yourself and Tim, there were some comments in his chat room about blasphemy laws and things like that, and there was one thing that was brought up too, is that where will the Muslims stand when jihad comes to town? So I had been just been dying to relate this article all week. It tied in perfectly into the chat that was going on Jeff's program. So you're going to have to listen to that. And if you would like to stay on the line with me, that's more than fine. I'm very welcoming of your being here. This show moves kind of fast. I have so many things going on my plate tonight. It's just I can barely keep up. I tell you, Mike, I barely come up for air. I could do this program 24/7, but unfortunately I do have a life, and if I keep doing it, I have to slow myself down because it's very consuming. It's all-consuming. I have spoken with people in the past about that, and it is, you have to step away from it. But Islam never sleeps, Mike. Islam never takes a break. Islam never gives us a break. What do you, like, you would certainly agree with that.
No, they have a clear agenda. You know, just to sum it up, it's some type of it's domination of the world, but it's really the West, because Western nations have a lot of resources.
Mm-hmm.
They have a lot of wealth. They have a lot of weaponry. And this is the objective, is to infiltrate Western nations using taqiyya and deception. Muhammad said that war is deceit. To come into these Western cultures, come into the school system, come into the government. We have that in the U.S. And over time, disseminate the lie that is being perpetrated, you know, that Islam really is not a threat. It's really just a small minority of people within the Islamic community that are these so-called extremists. But Careful examination reveals that Islam in itself as an ideology is very extreme, very anti-Western, anti-freedom, liberty, and democracy. It's totalitarian.
Yeah.
And at its core essence, it's a fascist system. And you being a woman and any of your female listeners, I'm sure are aware of the horrific oppression that women and young girls endure under Islamic rule. Even in the UK, we have, you know, I think there's female genital mutilation actually going on in England.
Oh, of course there is. It's going on, I mean, in North America, in Canada, in Britain, in Europe in general. For goodness sake, they know what summer vacation to Pakistan means when they're carting their 12-year-old daughters or even younger on the planes, and hey kids, school's over for the year, we're going to Pakistan on a family vacation. I mean, for goodness sake, the authorities know exactly what that means. They're being carted off to either be female genital mutilated, or they're being carted off into an arranged marriage. They know, as a matter of fact, the authorities know that. Mike, the authorities know this so well that they actually advise young girls, if you feel threatened, if you feel that you're not going on a family reunion to Pakistan or Syria or wherever the North Africa, wherever the hell they're taking these girls, they tell the girls, put a spoon in your underwear, and that'll set off the alarms. That'll set off the sensors at the airport, and we can pull you aside, and we can question you privately, and we can find out exactly what's going on. See, the West knows, Mike. The West knows there's a threat. The West knows that there are real issues within Islam, and that, unfortunately, it lives amongst us at this point. What we're going to do about it at this juncture is beyond me. However, if we know that these issues exist, why, Mike, are we not doing anything about it?
Well, most Western governments, I mean, look, all Western governments are very left-leaning, socialist, liberal-type, thinking individuals, and they don't see the threat, and they're actually they're kind of in bed with the Islamists for different reasons, whether it's economic reasons, you know, oil money. It just today, it's not politically correct to criticize Islam and criticize the behavior and ways of Muslims. Even it's been documented and proven how barbaric and you know, evil and violent that this culture has, and then it's brought into Western nations, and very often, like you said, a blind eye is turned for this insane obsession not to offend their sensibilities. And it's
exactly.
So, you know, what's so inhumane about it, not just the inhumanity that are perpetrated by the followers of Islam, you know, the ones that do these barbaric things, but the inhumanity of Western governments, Western politicians, who don't want to really look at it for what it is. They don't want the truth, or, of course, those that are aware of the truth but are not interested in addressing it for whatever reasons that is. That's a disgrace. It's just an outrage. So once these Islamic communities take root, outside of America, I mean, things go on in America that are serious problems, serious concerns, but my perception is that in Canada and especially in the UK and other European nations, Muslims feel much more bold and much more willing to do certain things that they haven't embarked on here in the U.S. yet.
Just give it time, because you and myself, our respective countries, we're not very far behind in what's happening in Europe. We are losing Denmark. We are losing Holland. We are losing. We're going to lose the UK unless the EDL, the English Defence League, steps it up a little bit more. And I don't mean in the protests down the street. Although I find that very effective, and I support the EDL for doing that. But they're a pressure group, and they have to keep the pressure on, and they have to hold the politicians accountable. It's the politicians who are engaging in the dimmitude. Not all of them are dimmy. Some of them are just outright ignorant and are not quite up to speed on exactly what Sharia is. But one thing for sure is that you're right about Islam becoming more emboldened, and they are. It's because we allow them to become emboldened. They have figured out how to. They discovered civilization, jihad. They discovered how to use our very laws against us, like I was mentioning earlier. But I'm not going to delve too far off. Mike, what I want to do, I want to play this clip by Wild Bill, and because it's very important, and you brought up a very good point for me to segue into it, and that is where are the women? Like, as a woman, yes, I'm very concerned. I'm concerned for my daughters. I'm concerned for my grandchildren. I'm very concerned, and women worldwide should be. This is why I feel like a lone voice, though, Mike, because where are the feminists? You know, 20 years ago, they were always harping and moaning and whinging about the glass ceiling. Now we see Islam at full face value for what it is and what it's doing to its girls and its women, the honor killing, the female genital mutilation, the forced marriages. You look in the eyes of a 12-year-old who's been married for 2 years, and you tell me how happy she looks. So Wild Bill put this clip together, and Mike, it's going to segue right into what you just shared. So take a listen to this, guys.
What's the difference between drunken wife beating and religious wife beating? Well, when the drunk wife beater sobers up, he usually feels remorse. All around the world and in the USA, Muslim women live under the threat of beatings, rape, and even being murdered by their own family or an angry mob. As an American law enforcement officer, I fought for 20 years to end wife beating in this country, and today I see it receiving almost protected status because it now comes under a religious banner. Islam, a religion that has the media and our government officials cowering in silence. Islamophobia is real, but it isn't the people who stand up against Islamic violence who are phobic. The Islamophobics are those who should speak up, but don't. Where are those feminists who claim to speak for women's rights? Where is the National Organization for Women? Used to be we couldn't get them to shut up. Now that Islam is here, we can't get them to speak. Where is the national media who were so brave when going after Sarah Palin and her children? They are shamefully silent. I hear reports of women's shelters turning away Muslim women because they don't want to get involved with cultural issues. An American judge recently declared a man not guilty of raping his wife because, as a Muslim, the man honestly thought he had the right. Well, not everyone is afraid of the big Islamo bully. This is still the land of the free and the home of the brave, even though the brave are getting harder to find. It's time to expose and stop Islamic violence against women and children in America. This will have to be done by conservatives, because the liberal left, who invented the word Islamophobia, are by far the best examples of it. This is Wild Bill for America. Thank you for watching, and America, bless God again.
And thank you, Wild Bill for America, for that clip and for his permission to play it. You can view all of Wild Bill for America, all his clips at YouTube. He has his YouTube channel there. Please check him out. He usually puts up one or two a week if he's not too busy fighting the scourge like the rest of us. Now, I have Mike on the line with me, and I'm going to switch gears a little bit. As I was talking with Mike about this, there was some chatter at the East Anglian EDO radio program today, and that was whether or not, what is the difference between a Muslim, a moderate Muslim, or actually, the crux of the question was, what is the difference between a Muslim and a jihadist? Our consensus in the chat room was, there's no difference, and I have to tell you why we agree, why we all came on board with that decision. I came across this article from Political Islam, and it is, when jihad comes, whose side will you be on? And I want to relate it to you, and I'm going to have Mike back on, if he's so willing, to help me dissect it at the end. So when the jihad comes, okay, hey Muslims, this is for you. What side will you be on? Now, there's good reason to ask this question to nice Muslims. It invites Muslims to declare their true values and loyalties. When jihad comes, whose side will you be on? Shoppers at Westgate Mall in Nairobi and Christian students in Nigeria have recently been killed because they had the wrong religion. What will our Muslim neighbors do when the jihadists come to our neighborhood schools, churches, and shopping centers in Europe and North America? Will Muslims protect non-Muslim neighbors from death, or will they side with the jihadists? A shopping mall jihad has already occurred in the U.S., but it was largely ignored. You mean it's already happened in America? Yes, it has. There is an event similar to the Westgate Mall attack. It occurred on the evening of February 12, 2007. A young Muslim man walked into the Troy Square Mall in Salt Lake City with a pistol grip, a 12-gauge shotgun, and a 38-caliber revolver, and opened fire on shoppers, killing five and wounding four others, including a pregnant woman. The death toll at Troy Square was higher than in the Boston Marathon bombing, but the killings were misattributed to insanity rather than jihad. Will jihadists attack shopping centers across America, Canada? Undoubtedly. They will do so because it is the Sunnah, the perfect example of Muhammad. In 627 AD, Muhammad beheaded 800 unarmed male civilians in Medina in a single day. He did so in a market. Bet you didn't know that, guys. I didn't. Wow. Islam's dual allegiance. Muslims have two loyalties, religious and political. Americans are loyal only to the Constitution. America has no state religion to adhere to, but Islam has both. True Muslims must be loyal to the political act of jihad as well as to the religion of Islam. Islam is a religion as well as a military organization. This is not an opinion, but the decree of Muhammad, in which he said, "My brother and I came to the Prophet, and I requested him to take the pledge of allegiance from us for migration. He said, 'Migration has passed away with his people.' I asked, 'For what will you take the pledge of allegiance from us then?' He, Muhammad, said, 'I will take the pledge for Islam and jihad.'" Bukhari, 4,500, my apologies, Bukhari, 4,052,208. Muhammad says allegiance to Islam includes the political act of jihad. Jihad is holy fighting against the kafirs, which is you and me. It is the personal duty of every Muslim. If a Muslim does not participate in jihad, he will die a hypocrite and burn in hell. Muhammad is the authority on Islam. Now, I'm going to give you some examples. I gave you some dry points here, but I want to make you understand that there is no difference between a Muslim and a jihadist because there is no differentiation. Why do Muslims not denounce the terrorists? Because Islam is harsh on hypocrites, the munafiqun in Arabic. Munafiqs are moderate Muslims. They give only lip service to Islam. Muhammad wanted to burn the munafiqs to death in their homes for not participating in prayer or jihad. Nonetheless, participate or not, they must not hinder jihad by thought, word, or deed. Islam's munafiqs sit back and look the other way while jihadists fight the kafirs and subdue them. When a munafiq helps kafirs during jihad, he becomes a traitor to Islam. He is considered to be a kafir at war with Islam, so jihadists may kill him too. Yeah, so you try to help an infidel, you little munafix, well, you're going to be killed too because you're betraying Islam. When jihad comes, a munafiq is not neutral. He is on the side of jihad rather than on the side of the kafirs. A munafiq is silent when the jihadists knock on their non-Muslim neighbor's door. The reason for this silence is the Quran 28-86. Never be a supporter of the disbelievers. And munafiqs can be reactive in jihad. One of the surprising things about Islam is how non-practicing Muslims often return to active service in jihad. Interesting. Sometimes it only takes a personal contact or a rousing sermon to turn a non-practicing moderate Muslim into a jihadist. This is similar to the recruitment of young pacifists in time of war. The Sarnoff brothers were nice, moderate, quote-unquote, Muslims, and then they became religious jihadists. The Boston Moonifix. How did the Moonifix behave during the Boston Marathon bombing? When Joker Sarnoff was about to be arrested, he called his non-practicing secular Muslim friends to dispose of incriminating evidence in his dorm room, and they eagerly complied. When members of the Sarnoff Mosque were asked about the two brothers, they kept silent about what they knew. When recruited, the Moonifix acted on the side of jihad. Now, what about the Moonifix at the Westgate Mall in Nairobi? When jihad came to Westgate Mall in Nairobi, there were many Moonifix shopping that day. Did these Moonifix try to convince the jihadists that Islam is a religion of peace and to stop the execution and torture? No. They left hurriedly and let the jihadists do their work of executing unarmed kafirs in a market. The Westgate jihadists believed they were following Sunnah. The Westgate Moonifix were not neutral. They took the side of jihad by doing nothing to stop it. Their silence gave approval to jihadic terrorism. And then we have Salman Rushdie and his fatwa. And you know Salman Rushdie, he wrote the Satanic Verses. Now, when a fatwa was declared against him, ordinary British Muslims expressed strong support for blasphemy laws to punish critics of Islam. Yeah, ordinary British Muslims, just ordinary British Muslims getting on in life, but they expressed strong support, Milaz, to punish critics of Islam. That musician, you remember good old Cat Stevens there? What's his name now? He's got some sort of Islamic name. Yeah, the musician known as Cat Stevens, he was asked if he would go to a demonstration to burn an effigy of the author, Salman Rushdie. Do you know what he said? He said, "I would have hoped it was the real thing." That's right, Cats in the Cradle and the Silver Spoon. Furthermore, if Mr. Rushdie turned up at his doorstep looking for help, I might ring somebody who might do more damage to him than he would like. I try to phone the Ayatollah Khomeini and tell him exactly where this man is. And that is his own words. That is Cat Stevens, and his name is Yusuf Islam. Now, he would take the side of jihad if the opportunity came. Moderate Muslims like Yusuf Islam know which side they are on, not on the side of the kafir, because jihad is not a peace train. What about jihad at Broken Hill, Australia in 1915? Now in 1915, two Kurdish immigrants to Australia read the Sultan's pamphlet announcing a universal jihad and planned their own self-directed jihad. They waited beside railway tracks and randomly shot Australian civilians on a train on its way to a picnic. Fatalities occurred. Then they shot a police constable. It's similar to the Boston Marathon bombings when you think about it. Now, what has changed in 100 years? Nothing. The doctrine is the same. The weapons are more sophisticated. And these were Moonifix, creating jihad at Broken Hill in Australia in 1915. What about the Armenian genocide? Edwin Pierce recorded this account from a Muslim woman in Turkey. "Then one night, my husband came home and told me that the Peshitta Caliphate had sent word that we were to kill all the Christians in our village and that we would have to kill our Christian neighbors. I was very angry and told him I did not care who gave such orders. They were wrong. These neighbors had always been kind to us, and if he dared to kill them, Allah would pay us out. I tried all I could to stop him, but he killed them. Killed them with his own hand." Absorb that. The moderate Muslim was told to kill his Christian neighbors, and so he did. Now, there are a few exceptions. We have some noteworthy examples of Muslims who saved lives during jihad. Khalid Abdelwahab of Tunisia was the first Arab to receive a Righteous Gentile Award from Israel. He had hidden Jewish families at his country home until liberation came. In 1915, a Turkish doctor married, quote-unquote, four of his Armenian patients to save them from extermination. The uncle of the Asarna brothers denounced his nephews and ordered them to surrender. So what motivates Muslims when they help kafirs in trouble? The answer in these moderate Muslims are disregarding the Quran 28-86. Never be a supporter of the disbelievers. Now we Western people, we have to examine, we have to re-examine our political correctness. We need to learn the dualistic doctrine of the kafir, and that underpins jihad. Otherwise, we will continue to have attacks against kafir civilians like those at the Westgate Mall, Trolley Square Mall, and the Boston Marathon. Muslims who attack civilians are imitating what Muhammad did in Medina in 627 AD. So, I ask you, one of the ways to learn about Islam dualism is to ask a Muslim, when jihad comes to our neighborhood, whose side will you be on? I hope that that answers your question about moderate Muslims and jihadists. Moderate Muslims, a.k.a. the Munafiq, you have to ask yourself, what side will they be on? Now, I'm going to bring Mike back on. He has been listening intently, but I also have Matt for America with me. I'm going to bring him on. Mike, could you hold? I'm just going to bring Matt on. I want to hear what Matt has to say. Matt, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you for having me. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
I'm good. I just want to touch on a couple things that you already mentioned, really. But it's funny how one of the only religions on the planet that we're having problems with seems to, in their religious texts, state that several times. As a matter of fact, it's almost the reasoning to have that religion, that man needs to take the life of another man. This is not God. This is not the middle, you know, the Middle Ages where we had the Knights Templar running around using God. Not that it was in the text, but they were using God as their excuse to kill. This is man. This is the text. This is the religion itself saying you need to go out and kill men that do not agree with these texts.
You do realize who the Knight Templars were, right? I mean, they were defenders of the faith, of course, but they were also defenders of the borders, and they were defenders of the Christian faith. They weren't aggressors. They were defenders. So they unlike Islam, the Knights Templar did not take free license to kill anybody who did not follow the will of Allah.
Yes and no. Not dealing with Allah, but something like that. Okay, let's, because I don't want to get into the Knight Templars argument. I have differences in opinion.
We could be here all night.
Let's just go with, say, the Spanish Inquisition. How's that? The Spanish Inquisition,
okay.
When that was called, they were using the Word of God. They were using the Catholic and Christian texts to back up their claims of what they were trying to do. With the name of God is what I'm trying to get at. They were shaping their own view on the religion instead of being able to go right to the text to you know, do what they wanted to do. So really you're taking with Islam, it's in the text. That's what the religion is about. It's about death.
Mm-hmm.
There's people around the planet that use Christianity, Catholicism, you name it, as their guideposts. A lot of people did it. But it doesn't mean that that's what the religion taught. This is what's evil about Islam. This is what people need to understand. I've known a lot of people that follow Islam and follow its teachings. I've met them. They've been neighbors of mine. We've talked about it. And they agree with me, and they agree that they follow a different sect of Islam. They kind of discount these parts of the Quran that deal with man taking another man's life, which is just ridiculous. But when you're talking just quote Islam without saying, yes, the original texts were wrong because it's not right to take man's life without God, you know, in God's name, I just... It's such an evil religion. It's It is the reason why we're at where we're at.
And what I want to do is I want to bring Mike back on the line and have him address your comment, Matt, because it's very intriguing to me. And Mike, welcome back. And what do you think about Matt's comment?
Okay, no problem. Just to give you a heads up, I did email you, and, you know, when you have time, take a look at it. I put something in there that I'd like Tom to see. It's a short trailer. It's a trailer for a documentary I'm working on called Tribute to the American Soldier. And
Thanks, Mike. And you sound like you're talking in a tunnel.
Get a chance, you know, forward it over so you can take a look.
Mike, you sound like you're talking in a tunnel. Okay, I think I'm going to put Mike back on hold for a minute there. And Matt, I want to thank you for calling in, but what do you think about the issue? I want to add, before you go, Mike's going to try to call back in because the issue of the moderate Muslim as opposed to the jihadist, do you see a differentiation between the two?
Well, I kind of touched on that before. I think there are moderate Muslims. I don't think that they reside in any Middle East nation, though. As I said, I've had neighbors and I've had friends, and they've told me that they were members of the what we call radical Muslim or radical Islam is not radical. That's Islam. That's the way it is. That's the way it's written. That's the following of the Quran. That's what it is. It's not. There's nothing radical about it. The people that I've talked to said that they have come away from that. They have separated from that because they don't believe in the whole talk of having any type of adversary that you would kill, any type of infidel. They don't consider any – infidel is really kind of a put-down. It's considering somebody beneath you according to your beliefs. And they don't think that way. They believe in Allah. They believe in the teachings of Allah, except for what it states in the Quran. A lot of what they say the Quran teaches is like, I'm Christian myself. But there's some things that I pick and choose from the Bible that I go, you know what, that's not right. I think that's man writing down the word of God instead of God's inspiration in certain spots. So I pick and choose with Christianity according to what my heart tells me, and I have a pretty good conversation with God about it to make sure that I think I'm on track. And I think that's what they do as well. So I wouldn't say that, the moderate Muslim is a moderate. I just think that that the actual Muslim faith as following the Quran and what we call, in a bad way, you know, we're saying that that's extreme. That's not extreme. There's nothing extreme about Islam except for the fact of that's what it is, period.
Mm-hmm. Islam is what it is. Islam is Islam. Islam will not – Christianity, we at least we came into a reformation in which we followed the King James Bible. We follow the New Testament. We do not adhere to the Old Testament at all. There's a lot of violence in the Old Testament. We live by the New Testament, and that is the peace and the light. The Quran will not evolve out of – they will not bring it up to the 21st century. They refuse to. I don't know if they will ever be able to in our lifetime, but something has to give because we're at a very critical juncture in our history right now, and we have to do something about it, and we have to do something fast. Would you agree with that?
I would totally agree, and I would agree with the way that it's coming into America anyway. Are you Canadian?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I am.
Well, really, it's into the North American continent. It's everywhere. When you're talking about Islam incorporating itself, it does that the same way everywhere. I mean, if you look at Michigan, if you look at Dearborn, Michigan, especially.
Oh, yeah.
Any other locale where there's a big Muslim community, you're looking at, if you really study into some of these communities, there have been court cases. And you probably have covered this. I'm sorry, I'm kind of new to the show, but you probably have covored this. But there's court cases.
That's fine.
there are court cases that have been held in America where somebody has gotten away with domestic violence or something to that effect because that's their faith. And it's in a mostly Muslim community. They're allowed to get away with it.
Yeah.
And however, if you go outside of that Muslim community, and I'm not saying this is a fairness thing. I'm saying this is what Muslims do. But if you go outside, it's just a comparison. If you go outside that Muslim community and you find a man who looked at his wife and swore at her, just swore, just said, you're a bleep bleep, okay? He just swore at her. He is in jail because that is considered domestic violence in America. But yet these people can get away with it. That is a takeover of the country.
I've got Mike back here. He had to refresh his telephone line, but I've got him back right here, and he's been listening to what you've been saying, Matt. And, Mike, welcome back.
Yes, I want to apologize for what happened earlier, just to let you know. As you know, I work with America's Wounded Service Members, and I got a call from the father of a United States Army Ranger who was injured in Afghanistan. And anyway, I was speaking to him, so I'm sorry about not being able to be on the line.
Oh, Mike, that's absolutely fine. Absolutely fine. But what do you think about what Matt and myself, we've been discussing, that there's pretty much a general consensus that there's no such thing as a moderate Muslim and an Islamist, but that they're pretty much all one and the same?
My take on it, as you know, is that those that faithfully practice Islam, they go to the mosque and are involved in reading the Quran. You know, they're interacting with a lot of other Islamic people. They have a good understanding of the teachings of this alleged religion. So therefore, they know the actual goal and objective of Islam, which is, when it takes root wherever it is to dominate and spread out and, you know, to fight until all religion is for Allah. Moderate Muslim is an erroneous term, because if a person is really practicing Islam, then they fully understand the aggressive, supremacist, and fascist ways of Islam. But those that may have just been born into a Muslim family whose parents are Islamic, primarily in Islam, it's the father. If the father is Muslim, then the child is understood to be Muslim. But if they do not practice Islam, they do not go to the mosque, then they are just really a non-practicing Muslim.
This is why I struggle so much, Matt and Mike, about this, is that I'm a Christian. I mean, I don't consider myself a lapsed Christian just because I don't attend my church services every Sunday. I am a Christian. I have my belief system. It's in me. I was raised a Christian. I was brought up on the Christian principles and the Christian values. Just because I don't attend a mosque does not make me a lapsed Christian. See, the difference between Christianity and Islam is that my God, He gave us the ability to engage in autonomy of thought and of feeling and of action, whereas in Islam, every move is controlled by the Sharia. Like, imagine a life where you have to pray five times a day. I don't have to do that in my faith, but I have a very strong faith, and I'm very, very committed to my faith. I will defend my faith. So for somebody to come across and tell me that, well, there's moderates and there's lapsed Muslims, I'm sorry, you're selling me a bill of goods, and I have a bridge for you. Like, please.
But there are people who I've met people in America who think of themselves as Muslim because they're born into a Muslim family, but they don't know the Quran. They don't practice Islam. They don't have any real involvement with Islam, but they still think of themselves as Muslim. That's my experience and my understanding. People that faithfully practice Islam pose a threat and a danger to Western civilization, as we said earlier, either in those who will carry out violent acts of jihad or stealth jihad, and then those that will just quietly support the jihadists.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many, many, many of them.
Yeah.
I have spoken in person to many Muslims, and if you know how to speak to them properly and kind of draw them out, they will admit and acknowledge that the Sharia are the best laws for man, and that the Sharia should be implemented and utilized in Western nations. And that's why they do really pose a threat. These are people, once again, these are Muslims who probably will never use explosives or some type of weapon of war or do anything directly to, you know, kill or harm an infidel. But they quietly support the objective of Islam, and that is to dominate. And if violence is necessary, violence is condoned. Of course, we know the Quran and the Hadith, they sanction violence. It's the only ideological system in the world. I mean, Buddhists, Christians, Jews, Hindus.
Well,
there is not,
I want to know what Matt thinks about that. What do you think about that, Matt?
Well, you know, the thing with Islam is that here's where it becomes such a major problem in America. First of all, it's a major problem to start with the Quran. With its teachings, it's evil. It just is. I'm sorry. I'm putting it right out there.
Yeah.
They can come after it. It's evil. But what we're doing in America is not only, I mentioned, Dearborn and things of that nature. It doesn't stop there. Go to your public school systems. Look at these Common Core initiatives that they're trying to pass through. Look at programs
rotten
like...
Rotten to the core.
Look at programs like International Baccalaureate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big one. This is a program that's up and coming in America, and they're trying to introduce more and more Islam into the public school system by teaching these kids, these public school children, what it's like to be a Middle Eastern child, but this is what they believe in Islam, this is what you need to know, kill the infidel. Okay, that literally, it kind of looks like it's going to be a nice way to learn about some kids across the world, and all of a sudden it turns into, this is what the religion is about. It hasn't happened in my public school yet, but we do have Common Core, and we do have International Baccalaureate in one of our elementary schools. And it hasn't gone that far yet.
I just want to interrupt for a sec. We have a question from our chat room, and one of them is confused about your statement that they wouldn't use explosives. I assume that you were referring to Civilization Jihad, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there are plenty of Islamists that are joyfully and would...
And I totally walked right all over Matt. Matt, I am so sorry.
Yeah,
don't be. Go ahead and answer the question, sir.
There are scores of Muslims that are more than willing to sacrifice themselves for Allah. We see that every day throughout the world. You know, you can go to the websites that monitor the peaceful ways of the followers of Muhammad. But there's a larger percentage of them that quietly support the jihadist movement. And then we have organizations and individual Muslims that are consciously and knowingly perpetrating stealth jihad.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just wanted to get that cleared up, and now I'm going to pass it back to Matt because I so very rudely cut into his, virtually cut him off mid-sentence. So, Matt, my apologies for that.
No, that's okay. It's your show, hon. It really isn't mine, and you do a very good job on this show, so it's no biggie.
Thank you.
As I said, you got to look at what's going on in the American education system, what they're trying to pass. Realize that a lot of what we're passing into the American education system deals with the United Nations. The United Nations sponsors many of these programs that come into public school systems, and they sell it to you as a bag of goods. They say, no, it doesn't deal with anti-Christian things, even though they've gotten rid of Christmas and Easter and every other religious holiday that deals with Christianity. They'll tell you that It actually deals with, learning about the rest of the world. And then they introduce Islam and they introduce, the evils of the West and the evils of America. So really it's the education system in this country that's allowing all of what we're talking about today to happen. And I think a crunch needs to come down. People need to start understanding that our government, the United States government, is in cahoots with this crazy thing that Woodrow Wilson started with the League of Nations that's now called the United Nations, that it's one in the same anymore. And we need to start paying attention to these programs that are being sponsored by these worldwide corporate entities known as governments that we put our trust in.
Matt, I couldn't have said it better myself, and I'm getting ready to shut down the show, but Matt, I want to ask you if you could please call into my program again, because it was a real pleasure to have you on the air, and my listeners in the chat room are just cheering you on. They really enjoy what you have to say.
Well, you know what? These are a bunch of American heroes. You're an American hero. This is what we need to do. Not just American. I'm sorry, you're Canadian, too. Canadian, believe me, I have a lot of Canadians.
You know, Matt, you know that's funny. I am an honorary American. I'm a North American. That's how I consider myself. Canada and the United States, we're in this together, and I will always defend my American cousins. I love my American cousins like you would not believe. I have such a passion for my people down there.
Hey, hey, you know what? I'm the same way. My favorite band is Rush, and that comes from Toronto. So,
hey.
I appreciate
Geddy
it,
Lee.
Guys. Oh, Geddy Lee.
Okay.
Geddy Lee, life's an imperial. I'm a drummer, so. All right, guys, I appreciate it. Thank you for the opportunity. I'll definitely call back.
Matt, thank you so very much, and I hope you do. Have a wonderful weekend. And Mike, I'm going to give you a few final words here before I start wrapping up the show.
Thanks so much. It's great to be on your program and to hear you speak. We're facing today in the 21st century the most serious threat to our freedoms and liberties, and it's coming from Islamic fascism. It's of the utmost importance that people today educate and inform themselves and to do their part and stand up and make their voices heard in some way or another. You know, the future of our way of life is really at stake, and it's not going to necessarily happen tomorrow or the next month or the next few months or the next year, but this is an ongoing process.
No.
And if we want a future for other generations or for our children and grandchildren, then we need to take this very, very seriously. We see the way they are. I mean, you know, people would say, I learned all I needed to know about Islam on 9/11. That statement has a lot of truth. It has a lot of merit. Every single Muslim will not be a perpetrator of terrorism. You know, that's not the issue. It's the ideology that we're fighting. And, of course, Kel, you're at the forefront of this battle in this sense. And I want to comment because you said something in the beginning of your program. You read a letter about veterans. My father served in the United States Army and fought for America. I'm very involved with America's Wounded Service members and veterans and things of that. I belong to a Veterans Marine Corps League military organization myself. So let's never forget those who've given their lives on the battlefield, you know, who are actually being shot at and stepping on IEDs. It's the same people, whether it's the Taliban, Al-Qaeda, Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic fascist groups in Western nations, wherever they may be, they're the enemy, and we have to stand up and do something, and no surrender or to retreat from this dark evil, backward dark evil that we're facing.
And Mike, on that note, I want to thank you so very, very much for joining my program. You're a great contributor with East Anglian EDL radio show, and so for you to phone into mine, I'm a little on the humbled side. I am grateful that I can get in touch with you via Facebook, and we can compare notes, and we can do this again sometime very soon, I hope.
Absolutely. I'm grateful to be on your program and getting to know you. God bless you in your endeavors and your work.
Thank you, Mike. And ladies and gentlemen, I really do want to thank both Matt and Mike for calling in. Great comments, great discussion that we had here. Oh, it was just wonderful. I want to share something with you, though, before I go. And this is going to tie into what we have pretty much been discussing all night, is that if you went to a interfaith forum, would you have questions for the imam at that interfaith forum? This comes courtesy of Restore Australia, and that is Mike Holt. And by the way, Mike Holt is a radio host heard right here on Block Talk Radio, Wednesday afternoons at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and you can catch him here on the Red Fox Blogger Network. But Mike Holt, he put this together, as you know, he had some questions at an interfaith forum, and this is the list that he put together. 1. Imam. Please correct me if I am wrong, but I understand that most imams and Muslim clerics of Islam have declared a holy jihad against the infidels of the world, and that by killing an infidel, which is a command to all Muslims as stated in the Quran and many surahs like 8-12, 2-216, 4-76, 9-123, and 9-73. They are assured a place in heaven. If that's the case, can you give me the definition of an infidel? 2, Imam, are you loyal to Australia First or to Islam? Imam, can you explain the concept of taqiyya, please? 4, why is there an Islamic constitution for Australia based on Hizb ut-Tahrir? 5. Islam, could you tell me how the Muslim Council for Australia is working to integrate Muslims into Australian society and cultures? 6. Imam, why do you think the Muslims in why do you think the Muslims in Lakemba said Lee Rigby deserved to die because he was a dog? Imam, if Islam is such a peaceful and open religion, why is it that Muslims can come to Australia and build mosques, yet Christians cannot build even a single church in any fully Muslim country like Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, and so on? 8, Imam, why are Muslims burning down churches in many countries and slaughtering Christians? 9, Imam, when we go to live in Islamic countries, we live according to the Islamic customs. Yet Muslims come here and may refuse to integrate and live like Australians. Instead, they already have imposed halal certification on a wide range of our food and our services. They demand segregation of our swimming pools, demand prayer rooms in airports and sports facilities, and demand to bring in Sharia-compliant finance and banking and housing. If life in Islamic in countries is so bad that you are fleeing to here, why do all Muslims try to change our society to be like the one you left back home? 10. Imam, your prophet Muhammad is revered by Muslims as the perfect man. The Quran says that you should all strive to emulate him in every way. Considering that he married one of his many wives, Aisha, at the age of 6 and consummated the marriage when she was just 9, does this mean that Muslim men must copy Muhammad's actions and continue to marry young girls? 11, Pastor, are you aware that if all Muslims manage to impose Sharia law in Islam on Australia, that you would be required to pay a dhimma, a tax imposed by Muslims on all infidels, just to stay alive? And are you aware that they will burn down your church and most likely kill you, even if you do offer to pay a dhimma? Question for you, Pastor. Imam, do you know that from the 8th century, when Muhammad started Islam, Muslims have killed more than 80 million people? Can you tell us why Islam is such a militant and violent religion? Imam, do you have any thoughts on why Muslim asylum seekers pass through so many Muslim countries to seek asylum only when they reach a Christian country, a country filled with unbelievers? Do you know why they do not want to resettle in a Muslim country? Imam, do you ever ask yourself why almost all the wars worldwide right now are in the Muslim countries and not Christian countries? Imam, in Australia, it is illegal to have sex with a girl under the age of 16. Do you therefore reject the Islamic tradition of marrying girls as young as 6 years old and accept Australian law? And finally, Imam, do you accept that if Islamic tradition, customs, or laws are contrary to Australian law, then Australia Muslims must reject these customs and accept the laws of the country they now call home, a country which has welcomed them to live amongst us? That is courtesy of Mike Holt of Restore Australia. I wanted to share that with you because Mike Holt, he speaks for all of us in the West. That is just not limited to Australia. That has to be addressed, and these questions have to be asked, at whether or not they be at these so-called interfaith forums, they have to be asked. In the United States, they have to be asked in Canada, they have to be asked in New Zealand, they have to be asked in the UK, they have to be asked in Australia. And I put the link in the chat room for you. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just about out of time. I overbooked the show a little bit, but I am actually off to another program where I will be part of a panel over there. I just want to apprise you of a few programming notes, and that is, of course, my being the Red Fox blogger, I will be back Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, where my topic is going to be exploring the Sharia. And it's going to be a very dense program, but my fellow host Tim Burton of Cat Strangler 101 is going to be with me. Tim Burton, Cat Strangler, he joins me every Monday afternoon now at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. We are both hosts of the Red Fox Blogger on Mondays. We're going to get into it, see what happens, see where it takes us, see if we enlighten you, apprise you, enrage you, and see if we can encourage you to do further research into the scourge that is called Islam. I also want to remind you that I am the technical producer over at the East Anglian EDL radio show, which can be heard right here on Block Talk Radio, Thursdays, Fridays, and Sundays at 3:30 p.m. Eastern Time, where Jeff Mitchell has a bang-on panel going on over there, so please tune in for that. I also want to remind you, Mike Holt of Restore Australia has his own program here, like I mentioned earlier, on Block Talk Radio, Wednesdays, 4 p.m. You can hear it here via Red Fox Blogger. I want to thank everybody who joined me in the chat room. I especially want to thank my guests who joined me on the line, and that would be Mike, and that would be Matt. I want to thank people who joined me in the chat room. There were so many of you out there. I cannot keep track. It was pretty busy out there. I still have Bigfoot with me. I have Kath with me. I have Doc with me. Dodgy Dave. Eric is here. Paul Alexander. And, of course, my Poppy. I have people pop in and out. MP91 Freedom Quest from Radio Jihad Network was here. Holger Awakens was here earlier. And just to remind you, Holger has a show tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, so please try to be there for that. Ladies and gentlemen, I cannot thank you enough for listening to the ramblings of a mad fox, which I am. We have to remember, though, there is a threat out there. We have to do everything we can to combat it because we have an obligation, not only to our soldiers and our veterans, past and present, but those who fought for our legacy, are fighting for our legacy. We cannot look our children in the eyes and tell them we did nothing. I want to talk forever, but I better not because I'm just going to bore you. Guys, have a great weekend. I'll see you back here Monday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And remember, it's mass Islamity. We have to stop the insanity. Good night. although I don't normally single people out, I forgot to mention Sue from New Mexico, who was listening on the line, and Mark as well. So my apologies, Sue and Mark. And Dodgy Dave just paid me the nicest compliment in the chat room. Dodgy Dave, you're a real sweetheart. So you know what? You made this little fox happy. Here you go.